Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the raw milk updates when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush, President Bush, said that what Americans wanted was jobs, jobs, jobs. But that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. The money is in tangible property. It's not in business or jobs, jobs, and jobs. Now, it's time that you cashed in on your inheritance and learned how to collect those benefits of the old covenant contract and to collect those benefits in real property. Property like gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on our CD Home School for Adults. And while you're at it, why don't you order our free General Law CD package at the same time? It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about this thing of raw milk update. It came from the original article here from Acres USA. Let me remind you about Acres USA again, give you the name and number. They're in Austin, Texas. Telephone number is 512-892-4400. This is the December 2007 issue. December 2007, Acres USA. It's one you want. The article on raw milk update. That number again, 512-892-4400. So, as a stimulus, I went to rawmilkfacts.com. They're an outfit called Real Milk. You can get them like this. It's www.realmilk.com. I pulled up probably 10 or 15 articles here on this thing of raw milk. Raw milk. So let me start off by giving you some history of this thing called raw milk and why it is that the raw milk is getting such a bad, a raw deal, I guess I could say, or a bad press. People have been drinking raw milk from animals for thousands of years. And really, the term raw is a misnomer because it implies that all milk should be cooked. But you know, that's a topic for another page. Now, whether it's from cows, goats, sheep, camels, yak, water buffalo, horses, donkeys, or even reindeer, unheated, unprocessed milk has been a safe, reliable food source for a long, long time. Even in the tropics, and centuries before refrigeration had ever been invented, raw milk has been an important food source for many cultures. By exploiting the preservative benefits of fermentation, primitive peoples were able to take a great food and make it even better. Having access to a nutrient-laden food from their animals gave many cultures a distinct advantage over their hunter-gatherer contemporaries. So rather than having to go from kill to kill, with sometimes many days in between, even nomadic tribes like the Maasai nearly always had a protein source at hand, whether it was milk or blood. So with a readily available food supply at hand, members of societies were freed up to pursue more productive things like making babies, building permanent communities, conquering their neighbors, and everything else that comes along with civilization and society by not having to spend so much time, effort, and energy hunting for food. So when we consider raw milk's role throughout history, it's very simple to see that it's not a deadly food. If it were deadly, then all of those dairy-loving primitive cultures would have died out and ceased to exist long ago, leaving only their vegetarian cousins to mind the store. So at the very least, people would have dropped it from their diets after discovering that it was killing them. And we haven't even gotten to the germ theory yet. Now, closer to home, our early American ancestors lived in a farm-based economy. And as the Industrial Revolution reached our shores, the cities swelled with job seekers lured from their farms by the factories and the mills. By 1810, there were dozens of water-powered operations lining the rivers of southern New England, all of them staffed by thirsty workers, with raw milk and whiskey being the two main beverages of choice, and demand for both grew along with the cities. Now, when the War of 1812 broke out, the supply of distilled spirits from Europe essentially dried up, and although the conflict only lasted about 2 years, its impact on our country was substantial, and strangely enough for milk, it was particularly nasty. To meet the soaring demand for spirits, distilleries soon sprang up in most major cities. In one of the most bizarre twists of entrepreneurial insight, some brilliant soul thought that it would be fun and profitable to confine cows adjacent to the distilleries and then feed them with the hot reeking swill left over from the spirit-making process. Now, as you might guess, the effects of distillery dairy milk were abominable, and for many of those drinking it, it amounted to a virtual death sentence. Confined to filthy manure-filled pens, the unfortunate cows gave a pale, bluish milk, so poor in quality that it couldn't even be used for making butter or cheese. Now add sick workers with dirty hands, diseased animals, and any number of contaminants in unsanitary milk pails, and you had a recipe for disaster. Now today we call those feedlots, and that's where we produce our meat, our beef. And predictably, because our beef is coming from these dirty, disease-infested feedlots, where, by the way, there are about 100,000 cows that just drop over dead. We call it Downer Cow Syndrome. In this country, we do not call it mad cow disease. It's Downer Cow Syndrome, about 100,000 of them. And they're eating bypass protein on these feedlots. I know you heard that bypass protein had been banned. Well, that's only part of the truth. They're not lying to you. The practice in the past was to take the offal, that is the guts, you know, the waste end byproducts that came out of our slaughterhouses, and then feed that back to the cows, feeding cows to cows. They stopped doing that. That's true. They didn't lie to you there. Now they take the cow offal and they feed it to the pigs. And then they take the pig offal and they feed that to the cows. So we've got a case of musical chairs here. We're no longer feeding cows to cows. We're feeding the cows to the pigs and the pigs to the cows. You get the same end result, but we're now able to tell you that we're not feeding cows to cows. All right. So we're not lying to you, we're telling you part of the truth. The results, though, turn out to be the same. It causes an acid condition in the cow, which is where the E. coli P. proliferate. Now, if in the meatpacking process you get some guy in here with dirty hands, he's been, you know, he gutted a cow, but his knife slipped, and he cut open the stomach lining or he cut open the intestines, and he got that on his hands. And then maybe he touched the inside of the carcass, or maybe he touched the outside of the carcass. Now you got this E. coli, which is inside this cow. Now, cows don't normally have this E. coli and salmonella in them. If their bodies are matched, if their pH is matched, they don't have that problem. Let me give you an illustration. If you got a dairy cow, then the dairy cow has mastitis. It's a pH balance problem. So what we do is we feed the vinegar to the cow. And then it will clear up the mastitis in about 24 hours. Now, this is not conventional veterinary medicine. See, conventional medicine would give them antibiotics, which would then kill the good bacteria in the cow's gut. All right, now to replace that bacteria in the cow's gut, you got to give them colostrum again. Listen, we don't do that in the dairy business. We just kill the cows and send them off, or we know you pack them up and send them off to the slaughterhouse and make McDonald burgers out of them. Now, for those of us that are interested in health, then we're looking for a solution to the problem. Not merely some way to manage it, but how to actually cure it, how to prevent it. And so, on a small natural dairy like I operate here, we don't have disease. And that's because the pH balance in our cows is naturally maintained by the foods that they eat. The cow will eat whatever she needs. When a cow needs boron, she'll go eat some weed with boron in it. When she needs iron, she'll go eat some weed with iron in it. When the calf is short of some nutrient, the interfacing of the saliva from the calf interspersed with the sensors on the cow's teeth will send a signal to the cow that says the calf is deficient in this mineral. Go out and eat this weed, and the cow will do that and come back, and that cow is perfectly fed, and it'll feed the calf perfectly. Those of us that drink the milk get all of the vitamins and minerals, amino acid, nutrients that cow has to offer, which is 100% of all the nutrients that the calf is ever going to get. So that's why milk is called nature's most nearly perfect food. If there's something better than milk, send me an email. Let me know, would you? Tell me what's more nutritious than milk. So when God gave us cows and he gave us milk, he wasn't whistling Dixie, you know, in a through a straw hat. There was a reason for it. Now, lacking its usual ability to protect itself, you know, and with a basic understanding of germs or microbes still decades away, the easily contaminated pseudo-milk was fed to babies by their unwitting mothers. And in New York City alone, infant mortality rocketed to around 50% and stayed there well into the 1890s. The distillery dairy page mentioned above contains links to articles in the New York Times archives, which enabled you to read all about it in the language of the era. The situation languished for years until two men stepped up to the plate from different directions, united by a disaster common in the day, the death of a child. In 1889, 2 years before the death of his son from contaminated milk, Newark, New Jersey doctor Henry Coit, M.D., urged the creation of a medical milk commission to oversee or certify production of milk for cleanliness, finally getting one formed in 1893. By joining with select dairy experts, Coit and his team were able to enlist dairy farmers willing to meet their strict standards of hygiene in the production of clean certified milk. After years of tireless effort, raw and pasteurized milk was again safe and available for public consumption, but it cost up to 4 times the price of uncertified milk. Now today, this raw milk, if you can find it, now is going to cost you $6 to $16 a gallon. Now, milk I saw the other day was $4.38 in the store, so, you know, $4 to $16 a gallon is about 4 times more. Now, you'd think that people that are willing to pay, you know, two, three, four times as much for a product must be pretty knowledgeable people, pretty serious people. And notice again that there's cheap milk. Well, the pasteurized milk was cheap. Listen to this. Strauss, a New York philanthropist, his name is Nathan Strauss, who lost a child to milk contaminated with diphtheria, felt very differently. He believed the only safe milk was that which had been pasteurized. Strauss made a fortune as co-owner of Macy's department store, and he spent decades promoting pasteurization across America and Europe. Using his considerable finances, he set up and subsidized the first of many milk depots in New York City to provide low-cost pasteurized milk. Well, you know, when people have to decide money issues, they'll usually go with price. That's why Walmart is so successful. Price sells cars. Price sells product. So if you have to pay, you know, $10 a gallon for raw milk and $4 a gallon for pasteurized milk, most people will choose pasteurized. I mean, after all, milk is milk, you know? They don't know. Well, they not only don't know, they don't care to know. Now, while infant mortality did fall dramatically, other technological advances, such as chlorination of water supplies, the reduction of previously ever-present horse manure through the arrival of the automobile occurred in the same time period, making it difficult to say which change was most responsible for the infant mortality decrease, or the decrease in infant mortality. Was it chlorinated water? Was it the horse manure taken off the streets? Or was it pasteurized milk? Or was it a combination of the three? Now, pasteurized and certified milk managed to peacefully coexist for a time, but by the mid-1940s, the truce had become decidedly uneasy. In 1944, a concerted media smear campaign was launched with a series of completely bogus magazine articles designed to spark fear at the very thought of consuming raw milk. Government officials and medical professionals, swayed by corporate dollars and lies, have effectively taken this valuable healing food from the mouths of people. And only in recent years has the consumer backlash against valueless processed foods grown to the point where access to clean raw milk is once again being considered a dietary right. All right, so let's understand something. We're not talking about the health, safety, and welfare of the public. We're talking about money. The dairy industry is a $20 billion a year business. The objective is to sell milk. And we want to eliminate competition. Raw milk is a competitor to pasteurized milk. And the reason we want pasteurized milk is because real, whole, raw milk has a shelf life of a maximum of 7 days. And pasteurized milk has a shelf life of double that, 14 days. Now, it takes a certain amount of time, boys and girls, to get milk from the dairy. That is, we're going to milk the cow tonight, and then we'll milk the cows tomorrow morning. And so two milkings are now in the bulk tank. At 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, the tanker driver comes by and he picks up our 1,000 gallons of milk. He takes it to the creamery. The creamery runs it through the processing facilities. And then they put it into bottles and gallons. And then they load it onto a truck and they take it to the grocery store and they put it in the grocery store, where it sits for a day before it's put on the shelf for you to buy. So, in reality, the milk that you're buying in the grocery store is 2 to 3 days old at the freshest. That's the best we can do. From the time it comes out of the cow at 5 o'clock in the afternoon until it gets into your refrigerator is 3 days away. Now, you don't drink the milk all at one time, so maybe 4, 5, 6 days goes by before you finish consuming the milk. Now, if you take raw milk, you know you're at the outside limit. Now, this milk, when it's pasteurized, it can sit in the Kroger store for 3 or 4 or 5 days. That's why we put this expiration date on here, is to give you plenty of time to consume the product before it turns sour. All right, now with that in mind, the dairy industry is less concerned about your health, safety, and welfare than they are about the marketability of their product. Now, if in the process there's some health benefit, that's fine. But it's not the primary motivation. Now, there are do-gooders out there, and this Weston A. Price Foundation is one of them. Now, I mentioned this to you the other day, that go to Pottinger. Well, actually, Pottinger is the guy that did the studies on what happens when you feed pasteurized milk to cats. This is back in the 1930s. And this guy's name is Pottinger. He's a doctor. And if I remember right, they were running a TB clinic. It may have been for something else, but it seems to me it was TB. This is back in the 1920s, after World War I. And, you know, time is going by, and what they're trying to figure out is what causes disease, or what's the behind these diseases. And so they started using cats as guinea pigs. You know, before they were using guinea pigs and rats and mice, they were using, Pottinger used cats. And so they fed cats pasteurized milk. They fed them cooked meat. And cats reproduce pretty rapidly. And so they discovered that in four generations of feeding cats cooked meat and pasteurized milk, they would go sterile. That's right. They went sterile. Now take a look at the reproductive disease that we have in America. Take a look at the sodomites. The gay problem here. Is it pasteurized milk? Start thinking now. Now, this is politically incorrect. So you can't go around and telling people the truth, because if you tell them the truth, you see, it upsets people. They really don't want it. They really can't handle it. Most people can't handle too much truth, especially all at the same time. It's unsettling. It's disturbing. It's politically incorrect. It's racist. I mean, there's 15 reasons why we need to sugarcoat everything that you get from Katie Couric. Make it more palatable. Unfortunately, it doesn't solve our problems. It doesn't tell us, you know, what the cause and effect relationship is. So here, back in the days before politically correct, you know, was in vogue, Pottinger is experimenting with these cats and finds out that disease, like cancer, is called the cooked food disease. That's where it came from. They find that if you eat foods that are raw, you don't get cancer. And in those cultures and societies where people eat primarily raw foods, they don't get cancer. It's unknown. Now, you get into a society that has cooked foods, and then you get more degenerative diseases. And that's where you're at with milk. Milk is a cooked food. And because it's a cooked food, it changes. It alters the proteins. It alters the food value of the food. Now, in milk, I've mentioned this before, let me mention it again, there's an enzyme. The enzyme is in the cream. You have to have the enzyme that's in this cream in order to digest the product. So they come along and they say to you, well, are you fat? Okay. You're getting too many calories. So you need to drink skim milk. All right. So they give you pasteurized skim milk, which is practically straight poison. If you were drinking skim milk off of raw milk, it would be poison. And why is that? Because the digestive enzyme that you need is in the cream. To digest milk, you've got to have the enzyme. Your body doesn't produce it. Only the cow produces it. This is why in the Bible God told you not to boil a kid in its mother's milk. It's because the cooked milk becomes poison. Boiled milk is poison. Pure and simple. Now, the nutrition is in there. You know, when they're telling you that milk contains all these nutritive elements, they're not lying to you. They're telling you the truth. And this is where deception comes in, remember? We just don't tell you all the truth. The calcium is in the milk, but in order for you to absorb the calcium and for your body to use it, it has to be digested. To digest it, you've got to have the enzyme that's in the cream in the milk. If you're drinking skim milk, you cannot get the enzyme. If you're drinking pasteurized milk, it doesn't make any difference if the cream is in the milk or not because the enzyme's dead. Got the same problem when you have cooked food. You destroy the enzymes. And hence, you come down with diseases, degenerative diseases like diabetes, cancer, heart attack, stroke, atherosclerosis, arterial sclerosis, and so on. These are degenerative diseases which are caused by the foods that we eat. Well, this Weston A. Price Foundation picked up on the Pottinger experiments, and they're out disseminating that now. And this is why we're on the air. We come along and we say, well, here's a controversial subject. Let's dissect this controversial subject and see if we can understand it. When the advocates of pasteurized milk came to you and said, oh my God, this dirty raw milk is causing disease and 50% mortality in children. They weren't lying to you. They're telling you the truth. Dirty raw milk is bad for you. It'll kill you. And so they wanted to clean up the milk. So the question arises, well, how should we do that? So one guy comes along and says, well, what we need to do is to clean up, this is Coit now, Coit says we need to clean up the dirty raw milk. And Strauss comes along and says, no, let's pasteurize it. Let's not clean up the milk. Let's just keep the same dirty milk. But let's kill all the pathogens in it. All right, it works. And there again, they're not lying to you. You can kill the salmonella. You can kill the E. coli. Well, at least most of it. You don't kill it all, but you kill most of it. And as a result of that, you solve a basic problem, contagious disease, but you create a second problem which is greater than the contagious disease, and that's the degenerative disease. So we're actually killing more people today with pasteurized milk than we ever killed in the past with contagious diseased milk. But it's not as obvious. And therefore, it's easier to sell the product. And after all, our job is to sell milk. We're not here selling health. And so, the Pottinger wanted to sell health. He was a do-gooder. And he said, well, let's get this information out to the general public over here. Well, you know, there are people out here that have a lot of money. And they don't want you to get that information. So they want to hide it from you. And we can do that. We can do that. And we do that through the media. We do it through the press. We do it through government. We do it through government agencies like the CDC and the FDA and the Department of Agriculture. We give you some truth, and then we mix it with error, and then this will cause you to come to a wrong conclusion. So, boys and girls, it's time for us, you know, to wake up, smell the coffee, and let's see if we can't come to a correct conclusion. Now, there's another little part to the story over here that I guess we ought to take a look at, and that's the government bias that's involved in this. It isn't that the government, which tries to portray itself as just the mediator between these two groups of people over here, and we're just trying to do the best thing for all of you people out there. And that's the lying hypocrisy of politics. You see, politicians are lying hypocrites. And politics is the modality by which the lying hypocrites spread or they disseminate or they sell their product called politics. Politics doesn't have much in common with the truth. It has to do with perceptions. And what we're trying to do is to sell a perception. As my old instructor used to say, we're not here selling meat. We're selling the sizzle in the steak. We're not just meat salesmen. We're selling the sizzle in the steak. We're going to create in your mind a perception. And then we're going to sell that perception. And then that is going to automatically sell the meat. So the politician comes along, and his real motivation in life is getting reelected. To get reelected, he needs money. And money is called the mother's milk of politics. And where does he get that money? He gets it from the people who give him campaign contributions. And the people that give him the most in campaign contributions are the people at the pharmaceutical industries, the auto industry, the computer software industry. These are the businesses out there, these multinational corporations. They're the people that give the money, the mother's milk of politics. Now, in order to get your vote, we have to meld the mother's milk of politics from the corporations into something that's saleable. See, if we come along and say, now look, here's what we want to do. We want to put seat belts in all automobiles, and then we want to pass laws and put you in jail if you don't use these seat belts because we want to protect the claims window of the insurance industry. See, you're not really interested in saving or saving money or protecting the claims window of the insurance industry. But you're concerned about health, safety, and welfare. So the politician comes to you and says, well, now the reason we need the seatbelt law is because this number of people got killed, and if they were all wearing their seatbelts, they wouldn't have gotten killed. There's probably some truth to that. But the primary purpose of seatbelts and seatbelt legislation doesn't have anything to do with health, safety, and welfare of the public. It has to do with money and the saving of the claims window of the insurance industry. And if it happens to save some lives in the process, well, that's just frosting on the cake. And the same thing is true here with milk. See, the purpose for banning raw milk doesn't have anything to do with your health, safety, or welfare. So the politician, he teams up with the government bureaucrat who teams up with the industry to create a perception that what we're trying to do is to protect you. That's what we're concerned about. It's you, Sally. It's your little baby. We want to protect you from this bad and tainted milk. That's all. Sally. All right, so let me give you a reminder here, and we'll take a look at that lying hypocrisy right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. GeorgeGordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network, or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Let me give you a reminder here that the source of information that we're getting, that we're using here for the series of programs, comes from Acres USA. I'd like to take all the credit myself, but I'm not that smart. And fortunately for all of us, there are a lot of real bright, smart people out there who have information that tells us the other side to the story. And Acres USA is one of those. So when you hear a story by Katie Couric and Brian Williams that comes from your government concerning agriculture, if you subscribe to Acres USA, you can get the other side of the story. You can probably put both sides of the story together and come to a reasonable conclusion based upon the truth. And that's because government tells you the truth a lot of the time. They only lie to you a little bit. And then Acres comes along and says, well, let me explain to you the lies that they're telling, and let me tell you what they're not telling you, so that you can put both sides of it together, and you can probably come to a pretty intelligent conclusion all by yourself. Acres USA, they got a phone, and their phone number is 512-892-4400. Once more, that's area code 512-892-4400, and they're located in Austin, Texas. Now, if you'd like a copy, this is the December 2007 edition of Acres USA, which contains the raw milk update, which is the catalyst for this week's report. Now, their address is Post Office Box 91299, Austin, Texas. And the zip code down there is 78709-1299. So once more, that's Post Office Box 91299, Austin, Texas. The zip code is 78709-1299. Now send them a $5 bill. That's a $5 Federal Reserve note, and that'll cover the postage and handling and the price of the December 2007 Acres USA. Now it's $27 a year. So if you're going to send $5 for one issue, why don't you send them $27? And then tell them, put me on the mailing list, would you? Send me your program, your newsletter, your magazine every month. You won't be sorry you did. It's probably the number one agricultural newsletter or newspaper in the country. If it ain't number one, it's right up there close to it. Now, I said to you that I was going to tell you about the bias, the built-in bias from the political process. Now, the FDA and the CDC, that's the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, and the CDC, that's the Center for Disease Control, provided no facts to back up their claims of widespread illness from raw milk in a recent press release. The FDA and the CDC remind consumers of the dangers of drinking raw milk. The joint FDA-CDC reminder claims that between 1998 and 2005, raw milk was implicated in 45 outbreaks, 1,007 cases, 104 hospitalizations, and 2 deaths. Yet the references cited the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report for the week of March 2, 2007 provides no such information, nor is any such information found in any other FDA or CDC document. And numerous requests to the FDA for clarification have not been answered. Let me pause right there. Government agents and agencies oftentimes lie to us. And then when you try to get to the bottom of the lies, they clam up. They won't tell you, and that's the case right here. And that's because the government is in partnership with industry. Partnership. And that's because the American Dairy Council gives a lot of campaign contributions to politicians. You don't, I don't, but these industry organizations do. And the politicians need the money to get reelected, to persuade you and me to vote for them. They need money. And so they get the money from these corporations. Now, there's a quid pro quo. If the politician takes the money from the American Dairy Council, well then, the American Dairy Council expects the politician to enact legislation, or to at least vote on legislation in their behalf. I mean, let's be intelligent people. Now, this government bias is an excellent example of government bias against raw milk. Now, Sally Fallon is the president of the Weston A. Price Foundation. The Weston A. Price Foundation is a nonprofit nutrition education foundation that promotes the consumption of clean, raw milk from healthy, grass-fed cows. The FDA and the CDC have provided not a single reference to support their claim of widespread illness from raw milk during that 7-year period. Not one iota of proof has ever been promoted. Now, they said that it came from, remember, the March 2nd, 2007 Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. But when you go to March 2nd, 2007, it isn't in there. So then when you write them a letter and you say, well, would you tell us, is that a typographical error? Maybe it's not March 2nd. Maybe it's March 2nd, 2006, or March 2nd, 2005, or maybe it's some other month. Can you clarify that? They ignore it. Well, and that just tells you they're lying to you. Now, reports of individuals becoming ill after drinking raw milk do exist, although none were cited in the recent CDC and FDA reminder. But even these reports do not usually provide proof that raw milk caused these illnesses. When someone who drinks raw milk becomes ill, these agencies immediately report that there is an association with drinking raw milk. They ignore all of the other vectors of disease and subsequent tests showing the milk to be clean, reports Fallon. The FDA and the CDC definitely have a double standard when it comes to raw milk. Fallon cites an example of a May 1983 outbreak of illness from Campylobacter, that's Campylobacter in Pennsylvania, reported to be associated with raw milk in the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Yet the report admits that cultures of the raw milk taken from the farm did not yield any Campylobacter, and members of the farm family who routinely drank raw milk reported no illness. All right. So now, when you see this reported in the paper, you will never see a retraction or a correction of the false story later on. All right, going on, a more recent example is the March 2nd, 2007 recall and warning against tainted raw milk sold by a New York County dairy, also in Pennsylvania. It's the Stump Acres Dairy. It was linked to two cases of salmonella outbreak, and although none of the dairy's remaining 250 customers showed any signs of illness, Stump Acres Dairy was ordered to suspend sales. Cultures subsequently taken from the dairy and the milk tested negative for salmonella, and the dairy was then reopened. Now, the September 2006 E. coli spinach outbreak provides another example. Over the past 8 years, Organic Pastures Dairy of Fresno, California has sold over 40 million servings of raw milk without one case of illness. During that same 8-year period, the California Department of Food and Agriculture issued 19 recalls for pasteurized milk products in California. Frequent testing of organic pastures, the state of California, and the veterinary departments of local universities have failed to detect even one single human pathogen in the milk. All right? That proves my point. So let me read that paragraph to you again. Let's think about this. There's a dairy in California, in Fresno, California. It's called Organic Pastures Dairy. In an 8-year period, they sold 40 million servings of raw milk without one case of illness. But during the same period of time, the California Department of Food and Agriculture issued 19 recalls of pasteurized milk products, pasteurized milk, which illustrates the point that we brought up earlier, and that is this. The raw milk is cleaner, that is, it has fewer, less, it's permitted to have less pathogens in it than is the pasteurized milk. After the milk comes out of the pasteurization process, it's allowed to have 20% more pathogens than the raw milk is. So the raw milk has to be cleaner coming off of the dairy than the pasteurized milk has to be after it's gone through the pasteurization process. Now, if that isn't a double standard, you tell me what is, would you? Secondly, there were 19 recalls of pasteurized milk because it was tainted. Not a single pathogen in the same 8 years was ever found on this raw milk dairy. Now, here's why. Raw milk has a natural antibiotic built into it by God Himself. That's why. Now, the milk that comes off of a commercial dairy is fed bypass protein. The cows have a high acid content in their stomachs. They are filled with E. coli and salmonella and other pathogens. Then we pasteurize the milk. And we destroy the enzymes that you have to have to digest it. Now, you ingest this pasteurized milk, which does not have the protection. It doesn't have the antibiotic in it. It's been destroyed by the heat. Now, you drink that stuff and you get sick from it. Maybe. But even that is just a pimple on the elephant's trunk. Hey, listen, kids. Your chances of getting a foodborne disease from milk, whether it's raw or pasteurized, is infinitesimal. 1% of all of the foodborne illness in the country comes from milk. Most of it comes from your hamburger. Most of it comes from something else. It doesn't come from milk, pasteurized or raw. That's a bogus issue to start with, coming out of the chute. Bogus. Doesn't even come up on the radar screen. 1%. But there is a real problem, and we saw that with the whiskey distillers. When you put cows in confinement, they live in a dirty environment. We call it a feedlot. Well, my cows go potty. And when they go potty out in the field. I mean, there's a 40-acre pasture out there. And the cows are eating the grass and they're going potty. They eat the grass and they go potty. Well, over a process of time it rains, and the rain then takes the manure and dissipates it into the soil. It becomes plant food to grow more grass. That's the natural cycle. Now, if I lock these cows up in a small confinement called a feedlot over here, I can feed them a lot of concentrated foods which will make them give more milk. Which is what dairies want, more milk. So they feed them growth enhancers, bovine growth hormone. So we give them hormones. We give them meat. We give them bypass protein. We feed them chemicals, and they produce more milk. Then we pasteurize the milk because this milk is coming from dirty cows. They've got a dirty diet, and they're living in a dirty confined environment. And as a result of that, we've got a cow that has salmonella and E. coli in their system, which you don't have in clean cows that are grass-fed on pasture. And that's because the natural antibiotics that are being produced by this cow protects you when you drink the raw milk. Protects you a hell of a lot better than pasteurization. All right. Now, there's a bias that's built in, and this bias that's built in by the CDC and the FDA makes itself manifest when we read the other side of the story. When we get the other side of the case, then we say, oh, well, they're only telling us half the truth. We're only getting half the facts. Now, here's the outfit you want to go to. It's called the Weston A. Price Foundation. And they're the ones that sponsor this www.realmilk.com. Now, I told you to go to Pottinger. Well, it's only half the story. Pottinger was the guy that actually did the research back in the 20s and 30s, but this outfit called the Weston A. Price Foundation, and they've got a website, and it's all one word. It's www.westonaprice. Westonaprice. It's the guy's name. First name's Weston. Middle name is Alvin. Last name is Price. And so we got westonaprice.org. Now, if you go to that website, you're going to get the experimental, you'll get the source for the experiments that I told you about concerning the cats and what happens when you feed cats pasteurized milk. They go sterile. What in the hell do you think that does to human beings? What do you think that does to sodomites? What do you think that does to your little boys and girls when you feed them pasteurized milk and then you wake up one day and your kid's gay? Has anybody ever connected the dots? Don't you think it's time to start smelling the coffee? Let's wake up. Now, in September 2006, after four children who had consumed raw milk and also raw spinach or sushi became ill, state officials ordered the dairy to shut down. So here's this organic pastures dairy. They never found a single person sick, never found any bacteria in their milk. But four children consumed raw milk from that dairy, and they also ate raw spinach, and they also ate raw fish. And when they became ill, state officials ordered the dairy to shut down. All of the organic pastures products were recalled. The officials performed more than 2,000 tests on the entire dairy operation. This included swabs taken from the 300 cows, the farm, the manure, the equipment. They never found a single pathogen. They couldn't find one crummy germ, for crying out loud. Why not? There weren't any germs. Why? Because God designed an antibiotic and put it into the milk. The cow already has an automatic built-in antibiotic, kids, in the cow. But we got to feed the cow correctly. Now, if you take the cow and you feed the cow meat, if you feed the cow in a dirty feedlot, if you feed the cow grain, if you feed this cow bad feed, then you throw the cow's pH balance out of kilter, and the cow develops acid. And the acid then is the breeding grounds for the E. coli and the other pathogens, which is exactly what you have on commercial dairies. Which is exactly why you have the disease in commercial dairies that you don't have in the raw milk dairy, in the organic dairy. Now, that's why I mentioned to you earlier, you know, just because you're drinking raw milk doesn't mean that that raw milk is fit to drink. Let me caution you there again. You know, I have students, they come, oh, I drink raw milk, Mr. Gordon. I'm getting raw milk here in the feed, in the parking lot. I mean, that's almost like buying heroin or cocaine. Oh, I got my heroin, my hit, and I got my cocaine. I bought it from Sam down in the parking lot. What the hell's that all about? Now, there isn't any reason why 300 million Americans can't all have raw milk. Everybody in America that wants raw milk can have it. There is a legal modality for accomplishing that goal. And I submit to you that the solution to this is, let's just follow the laws. Now, the laws make it more difficult for you to get raw milk. Used to be that the law made it difficult for you to get pasteurized milk. Now the law makes it difficult to get raw milk. Not impossible. Just more difficult. But I want to make sure that you get the story straight. It's kind of like meat. Meat's good for you, and God said so. But not all meat is good for you. Some of that meat out there is bad. It's called unclean. Now, raw milk is good for you if it's clean raw milk. But if it's dirty raw milk, then that's bad for you. And I don't want to recommend now that you're out here drinking dirty raw milk. Because that raw milk, it might not have manure in the milk. I mean, the milk may be white and clean and produced with stainless steel utensils. But that doesn't make it clean. It can still have bad agents, bad pathogens in it. So you need to know the guy that's producing the milk. I mean, is this guy feeding meat products to his cows? Is this guy feeding a lot of grain to his cows? Now, a little grain's all right, but, you know, if you're feeding a lot of grain to these cows, well, then that creates that acid balance again, see, that acidic balance. So we gotta have grass-fed cows. And these grass-fed cows don't produce as much milk. And because they don't produce as much milk, it costs more money to produce it. And that's why it costs 2, 3, 4 times as much. You can buy cheap. And cheap is usually just that. Cheap. It doesn't have the value. So if you want good value milk, then you're going to have to pay for it. Now, the point that I'm making here is that there are people that are willing to pay that $10, $15 a gallon for clean, whole, raw milk. I think people ought to be able to make that choice. Now, government can play a role. I don't deny that. The government can come in and make sure that these people are producing clean, whole, raw milk. That'd be a good role for government to play. Unfortunately, you get the government agencies involved, like the CDC and the FDA, and they can be bought off. The politicians can be bought off, and that's what's happening. They're just buying them out. And so the legislation that comes out and the biases that are so damn obvious here come right out, and then they're just naked for all of us to look at. And that's why I wanted to bring this to your attention. That they produced 2,000, they performed 2,000 tests on this entire dairy operation, and the raw dairy products are now back on the store shelves, yet many state health officials continue to report that organic pastures raw milk caused illness due to the E. coli. It was a damn lie. They couldn't find one E. coli bacteria on the whole damn farm. Why? Well, because the farm is clean, the cows are clean, and so the cow's acid alkali balance is in order, and because it's in order, there aren't any E. coli bacteria. Now, how do you like that? Now, that's designed by God himself. That didn't evolve that way, kids. But that doesn't mean that we can't take a good product like clean, whole, raw milk and sully it like we've done in the past and turn it into a poison, turn it into something that's really bad. So there's two sides to the story here. So let's get all the facts in the story and present them, and then you make your own decision. You can decide for yourself. You're an adult. You ought to be able to figure out whether you should drink raw milk or not. Hey, I'm running out of time, so let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. Now, if you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.